everyone, and welcome to Real Estate Right Now, where we talk about real estate matters that matter to you. We are live here from LumberCraft Team Studios in Raleigh, North Carolina, part of the Research Triangle Park. Today's show, well, let's just talk about generations. One generation in particular. Let's talk about Generation Y. Sometimes we refer to them as the millennial generation. And you know, one of the things about the millennial generation is oftentimes sellers and agents want to know, well, what's so different about the way the Gen Y generation actually purchases property? What might they be thinking? What might they be going through? And what can you do, right, to help maybe move that process along a little farther? And if you are a millennial, and I know that there are many of you that are Gen Y millennials out here watching the show, and thank you for that because you have a lot of choices. Here's the thing. You're going to get some information today about your generation. Now, listen. I've done interviews with Chris DeSantis, who is a generational expert, and the truth of the matter is there are always exceptions to the rule, but we're talking about a generalized category within your cohort in terms of how typically we see Gen Y and millennials purchase. Well, my guest today has done a tremendous amount of research on your cohort and for those of you who are trying to sell or, you know, interested in buying. And his name is Tony Fink. Tony Fink is the listing and buying expert here at LumberCraft Team Realtors. Tony, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jay, thanks for having me back. I want to compliment you on the new digs.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a while since I've been
here.
You've reinvested some capital. It's looking stylish.
Yes.
I'm glad we could make our calendars combine.
Yeah, no, you know what? We wanted to make the studio more inviting, right? I think we were accomplishing that. And we wanted to give it more of a home feel. I think there's going to be more additions coming in the future. But you know what? We're getting closer, you know, to that. We haven't got the coffee machine yet, so there's no coffee in the cups. But we're getting closer. All right. So, Tony, I know you've done a lot of work and research with regard to the millennial cohort or the Gen Y cohort and in terms of buying and purchasing property. So why don't you bring us up to speed? Who are we talking about here? And what are we going to be kind of facing? What are they facing right now?
Sure, I'll gladly do that, and it will circle back to my comment to you and complimenting you on your office. So when we go back and think about the millennial generation, and there's no stereotypes here. Millennial generation is just a term applied to, as you said, Gen Y?
Gen Y.
Not Gen Z. Those are my kids.
And Gen X is us.
And I'm Gen X. You're Gen X.
We're Gen X, right? Yeah.
So there's been a couple things when I help Gen Y sell or buy a home that registers to me that's pretty different from my thought process before I became an agent when I bought as a Gen Xer. Or what I understand baby boomers who bought, you know, generation ahead. So I thought that may be a good context. And my comment about the attire for the podcast room, which is phenomenal, is that if you do own property in today's world, the millennial generation is somewhere between 73 and 80 million people. Okay, so it is the largest buyer pool. It is the most active buyer pool right now. So if you own property and you're going to be executing a sale of that property, you need to think about how a millennial thinks about a house and what they're looking for in finish levels, color choices, and things like that.
You know, initially, before they were ever called Gen Y and millennials, they were called Echo Boomers.
Ah, you're right.
They were called the Echo Boomers because they're, you know, we had the Baby Boomers, which were a huge cohort. And then they had us, which was actually a pretty small cohort. And then there was this echo of the Gen Y. That's a big cohort of a group of people out there that are now buyers. So what do they want to do when it comes to buying?
Motivations for buying.
Yeah, let's talk about motivation. What's some of their motivations?
I'll play it out too a little bit more. They're the largest generation, I think, that can be identified so far, but they're also spread out. So they are the peak buying pool right now. I forget the age categories, but I think millennials go from very late 20s to very late 30s, maybe just a hair onto the 40s.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that's really interesting, and there was a survey done recently that surveyed millennials and talked about what are they looking for when they buy a home. And this was my aha moment. And I'm going to sort of camp on three things that they were looking for. But number one is wealth creation. Now,
that makes sense. Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
But if I apply my own bias to it, when I bought my first home, it really wasn't about wealth creation as my primary motivation.
Right, right.
It was about creating a sense of place,
right,
a sense of home, and having stability of housing costs.
Right.
It's a different mind shift. I have quite a few millennials where they'll have generic set of parameters they're looking for when they're purchasing a home. But ultimately, the thing they want to know the most is, what is the appreciation potential for this house once it's got the fence for the dog,
right?
Once it's got the open or non-open concept, depending on what's appealing to them.
Right.
And once it's in a geographic area that they want to be in, although they are flexible in their geographic areas, then it's about price appreciation. And they will probably take on more labor if they've owned before. So that's not a first-time home buyer. Not all millennials are first-time home buyers.
Right, absolutely.
But they may take on more work
to
create that opportunity.
You know, that's so fascinating that you say that, because my son is millennial, right? And he lives in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And he purchases his houses. It's all about an upside. What's the ROI on it? What am I going to make on it? It's really interesting that he is so focused on that. That, you know, everything he looked at was like, nope, until he said, okay, this one I know I'm going to make some money on. And then he put some sweat equity into it.
Yes. So there you go.
Yeah. He put a bunch of sweat. Matter of fact, he taught himself skills so he could do his own work in his house, which I just found fascinating, because I never thought he'd be interested in a hammer. So,
well, it's the DIY mentality, right?
Right. Yeah.
Do it yourself.
Right.
It's the, you know, everything has got to work for, you know, buyers always have some common aspects, right?
Sure.
The home has to appeal to them. It has to be in an area that they're comfortable with.
Right.
It has to be in an area where they view, you know, proximity to work, proximity, walkable trails, you know, whatever those categories are. Those are kind of span all generations. Mm-hmm. But the primary motivator being, Tony, what's the upside?
Right.
Right. And that really influences what decision they make, how they approach the offer, and what house they go after.
Right.
So it's been pretty enlightening.
That's pretty cool. So what does that now mean? Now that we have some of that information, what do we do with that information to help either, I guess, two things. One, how do we help a millennial make, or Gen Y make, that decision going forward? Because there's got to be some, you know, if there's not an upside, they're concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, how does a seller, that's the second question, how does a seller help maybe, or maybe an agent like you, how do they help them make that decision process a little easier?
Yeah, that's really good. I think as a seller, there's only so much you can do.
Okay.
So I think last time you and I spoke, and I know we've spoken since, I used the word millennialize your house.
Mm.
So if you're a seller and you have the capacity and the ability to update the home in a way that's going to appeal, again, when I say appeal to millennials, you're trying to appeal to the biggest buying pool.
Right.
Right. It doesn't matter if they're millennial, Gen X, Gen Y, you know, or whatever it is. So that's usually in furnishings. You could stage the home to make it more appealing. Mm. It's finished colors on flooring, you know, the Brazilian cherry or the darker wood floors, not the mahoganies or the chestnuts.
Right.
You know, they may not be as appealing as to the bleached driftwood look.
Right.
So again, it depends on your budget, but, you know, doing paint like with the walls here,
right,
removing artifacts, which is a, you know, polite way of saying your personal stuff, is one thing you can do. But really what I wanted to talk about with you as well is, so what keeps a millennial from buying?
Yeah, that's great. The great question.
And if you don't buy, guess what you don't get, Jay?
Well, if you don't buy it, you don't get anything.
You don't get upside.
You don't get anything. Yeah.
And what do you think the interest rate on rent is, Jay?
The interest rate on rent?
Yeah. 100%. You're right. Rent is 100% interest.
Right.
I know that is, and I'm taking some liberties here. I'm an English major, but I'm taking some liberties.
Yeah.
Interest, when you look at rent is basically 100% interest.
Right. Right.
You're paying someone else's mortgage.
You're paying somebody else's mortgage.
You get no upside.
Right. Yeah. No upside. Right. Okay. I got it.
So 53% of millennials surveyed who want to be buyers, but who have yet to buy.
Yeah.
Could you venture to guess what is holding them back from the buying decision?
Well, then it's got to be how much money I can make, right?
Sort of. I'm going to give you a yes, Jay. I'm going to give you a yes on that. It's I'm waiting for prices to go down.
Oh, right.
It's not quite how much money am I going to make, but implied, you know, implied in your answer is part of the question. Right. If I pay too much, I'm going to make less.
Okay. So is it, I know this is not probably something that you research, but that almost sounds like I'm afraid of what I might lose more so than what I can win. Or is it the opposite?
It's afraid I'm paying too much or getting taken advantage of and overlooking how much I could get.
Got it.
So missing the opportunity benefit of making the decision to own. Right. And again, not all millennials are in this situation.
Sure, of course
not. This is just what is the primary reason from this recent survey that would keep a millennial who wants to be a buyer, which means they're financeable, they have stability of lifestyle, they have stability of income, and they're just on the sidelines.
Right, got it.
And again, there is no angle pressure or anything on our part with respect to talking these through.
Right.
It's just, hey, what are you truly missing? So part of an agent's role is to help educate, inform, and support your buying client and show them what's going on. So I did a little thing and I went back and I looked at Wake County because we're in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is in Wake County. So Wake County is a good proxy for the Triangle area of North Carolina.
So you did a little thing.
What was that?
You said you did a little thing. I'm really excited about
what did research. Jay loves data.
I do.
He knows I don't.
I do. I want to know what the little thing is. I want to know what the research is. Yeah.
So let me give you the data. Here's what I did. And this is, you know, just kind of relative data. It's directionally accurate. I'm bringing up my corporate words. We have some transparency and visibility on the future.
Right.
There's no predictability. Right. There's no guarantee that past performance will equal future performance. Just disclaimers there. So if you go back to 2000, Jay, the median home price sold in our multiple listing service in Wake County was, are you ready?
I'm ready.
$175,000. 175.
That was the median?
Median.
Really?
And there were 10,700 transactions in 2000.
Okay.
So we're going back 23 years.
So this is 23 years ago. Yep. The median price was 175.
175.
Okay.
In Wake County.
In Wake County.
In the MLS.
Wow, I've completely forgotten about that. Okay, go ahead.
So you want to know what it was in 2010? Of course you do, Jay.
Of course I do. I want to know.
238,000. Yeah, all right. I missed a little upside, but 10 years.
Okay.
You know, I was renting. I wasn't tied down. I could move. Whatever.
60. So 60 grand, somewhere near.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Okay.
2020.
Okay.
Now we're bringing it into whatever decade 2020 is. 370,000. So now am I getting your attention?
Yeah, because now we've more than doubled since 2000.
Now, if you were a millennial, you couldn't have bought in 2000. I understand that. We're just using this for a relative gauge. And in 2020, there were 17,000 transactions that closed.
Mm. Okay.
Want to talk about 2021, Jay?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
435,000.
So hold it. We went from
175 to 435 in 21 years.
Wow.
Now, if you're a millennial, do you have the visibility in your life to see out 21 years? Probably not, other than you sure hope you're going to be alive in 21
years. Right.
Let's talk 2022.
Okay.
517,000.
Wow. So now we're almost triple.
Let's talk year to date.
Okay.
2023, real numbers.
Right.
Interest rates in the sixes.
Right.
What's the median home price? 500,000.
Mm.
So if you're waiting for better prices, they're now.
Right.
If you're waiting for prices to crater and think you could buy a $500,000 house today
for 300
back in for 375 or 175,
right?
I'm not a pretty good forecaster, but I can tell you I would bet against you. I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because real estate over the long term, and you can look at wherever you want to look, you can go to whatever resource, financial guru you want to check. Real estate over the long haul goes in one direction, a new direction.
It goes up. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So that's pretty powerful. So when you start thinking about it in those terms about how real estate does, and of course we do have a disclaimer that says, past performance is no indicator of, you know, future performance. But at the same time, you know, of all the investments that you possibly could make, have made in your time, I'm not sure that I could, it would be very difficult to find one that has increased in that kind of value as real estate has.
You're spot on, and you didn't see my notes, but you, you jumped to what
I'm sorry.
It's like-minded. So what you just said is really, really important. So real estate is a very unique investment class because your primary residence is the only investment we can make as humans for the most part that we can live in.
Right.
You could buy an investment property and live in it, but then it's your primary residence. So we're really talking about the same thing.
Right.
I guess you could live on a boat or a van down by the river, but that's not that much fun.
That's not, yeah.
So what's really interesting, and there's a term used quite commonly in real estate among real estate professionals, typically commercial real estate. You ever heard of OPM?
Other people's money?
Other people's money.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what happens when you buy that $400,000 condo? You put 10% down.
Right.
Okay. So I don't need $400,000 to buy a $400,000 condo.
Right.
If I want to buy $400,000 of stock, I need $400,000 for the most part.
Right. Right.
So now I'm going to go put 40 down. I'm going to buy a $400,000 asset. I'm going to call up one of the great local lenders and get a mortgage.
Right.
What happens when that house goes up in value?
Well, your mortgage stays the same, but you increased your equity.
Correct. Including if I'm paying the mortgage, part of your mortgage is forced savings, is how it was taught to me when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Forced savings means you're paying down your mortgage, increasing your equity, irregardless of what happens to pricing.
Right.
But when the mortgage comes due, when the mortgage comes due, you pay the bank back what you borrowed.
Right.
You get all the upside.
Right.
So I don't know, do the math. If a $400,000 condo over 5 years appreciating at 6% cumulative, which means it goes up 6% every year, trades for something north of 500,000, you borrowed 360, bam.
Right.
You're positive 100 grand.
Right.
125 grand.
Right.
On a $40,000 investment.
Right.
That is amazing financial leverage.
Yeah, it is amazing financial leverage. You know, you said something briefly and you kind of walked over it, but I have a coaching client who is a millennial and he's looking at purchasing his first piece of real estate.
Does he need an agent, Jay?
Well, he's in New Jersey.
I know agents.
But here's what he's going to do. And I think this is pretty genius because this just goes in line with what you're saying, is that he's looking at buying a triplex or a quad that he can live in because what he wants is he wants to take advantage of having a place to live, but at the same time having positive cash flow immediately, which sounds so like this particular cohort that you're describing here of going, maybe I can have the best of both worlds, right? I can get equity over the course of time. I can live in the property, but I can also maybe get some positive cash flow out of it at the same time. Even if it's minimal cash flow, I still have a positive upside. I think that is really quite genius, quite genius thinking on his part, because our cohort, we didn't think that way.
I know. Like, how much money can we borrow from mom and dad?
Right.
No, that's a really smart way to do it. And I want to be a little careful because when you're borrowing money on your primary residence, you're making disclosures to a lender.
Right.
So you want to make sure you don't run afoul of any of that. But I do know of millennials who have on occasion rented out a room.
Right.
Right. And got some positive cash flow that way or offset. So depending on their lifestyle situations, my big point is if what is keeping you from buying in a market that's got strong dynamics would first start with population stability or population growth, income stability or income growth, job stability or job growth.
Mm.
If you're in one of those markets, the probability that pricing goes down dramatically is not very high. It's offset by or outweighed by the probability that appreciation does happen.
Right.
And then people do tend to get focused on interest rate. Well, if I had bought 2 or 3 years ago, I could have got a 2% or a 3% mortgage.
Right.
Absolutely true. You have to go back in time to understand why we had 2 and 3% mortgages.
Right.
And I'm glad we're not back there.
Right.
Coming out of a financial downturn that started with 9/11, then throw in a global pandemic. Those are not fun times.
Right.
Chances are rates aren't going to go down that low again.
Yeah.
But if you own a fixed asset, which is what a home is, you can always refinance.
Right. That's the key, right? You can still marry the house and date the rate.
You can definitely do that.
Right. Because you can always refinance the house for a low rate if the rate should go down. But it's interesting because perspective is everything, right? Because when I first got into this real estate world in 1997, right, we were around 7.5% interest rates, right? When it got down to 3, but by the way, we thought 7.5 was pretty good because we had just come out of the mid 80s, which was like 16%, right? And it was really high. And then we're at 7.5. We're thinking, well, man, this is a great rate. And then when, of course, all the other things happened, we got down to 3% and we thought, oh, this is fantastic, right? It's free money, right? Now we're at about 6 and I'm like going, man, this is a great rate, right? Just based on my perspective of seeing the real estate market over the course of the last 26 years, right? Of going, wow, this is a great rate. But perspective is everything because people saw 3%.
Right.
And they're going, well, that's 2 times what I was paying.
So how I help clients think about that is you can't do the shoulda, woulda, coulda game.
Right.
There should be no regrets in life, generally speaking.
Sure.
You can't go backwards and rewrite history. So you didn't buy at 2 or 3%. It is what it is. You are where you are. Look at it this way. Maybe this helps the dynamic. Look at the probable appreciation rate for the home you're buying, the neighborhood it's in, the county it's in, the area it's in. And if your interest rate is lower than your projected appreciation rate, it's a no-brainer to buy.
Right.
That's without the tax benefits of owning home.
Right.
That's without the deferred or tax-free gain potential, which we haven't talked about, which as a single individual, if you've lived in the house 2 of the last 5 years, again, I'm not giving tax advice. I can't do that.
Right.
Tax laws change. You can protect $250,000 of gain when you sell your house.
Right.
Okay. It means you don't pay taxes on it. It's yours to keep, reinvest, do whatever you want with. Married couple, $500,000.
Right.
I can't do that with my stock portfolio. Can't do that with my Bitcoin or my Dogecoin or my Starbucks cup or whatever it might be. So again, I'm very much a proponent of real estate for one basic purpose, financial wealth creation for the individuals.
Okay. So I want to maybe have you, and I know we didn't talk about this, but I'm going to throw this at you anyway. Talk about maybe, you know, what someone like a millennial who's interested in wealth, is there a particular thing they should be looking at in terms of, you know, stay away from, I don't know, stay away from is the right word, but maybe, you know, this is a better investment than this is a, and than this when it comes to purchasing a house. Is there certain things that they should be looking for? Like maybe do areas in certain places not maybe have as much equity as others that they should be paying attention to here?
Yeah. So that's a good question. A real estate professional in, you know, if you are buying a home, unless you're a licensed real estate agent, have an agent help you out. There's things that millennials or first time home buyers or people relocating from one area to another may not focus on. The easiest example would be proximity or backing up to a major roadway. Most people in communities will tell you over time that will inhibit value. You know, when you have an inventory constrained market, you may jump on that because it's the best house, but
right.
Well, the but becomes less important. So that would be the first thing I would really kind of throw out there is make sure you're buying a house that doesn't have any obvious constraints.
Right.
And if it does, just factor that into your equation.
Yeah, because I think the thing that people need to understand is that the best price isn't always the best buy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, just because it's, you know, you go, oh, well, this is a great price. But if you're looking at wealth creation, this may not be the best buy for you in terms of trying to achieve that goal.
Correct. For wealth creation, right? So when you buy a home, what Jay's trying to articulately say well, and you are saying it well.
Okay.
I'm trying to get a smile out of you.
Okay.
Is in real estate, as crazy as it sounds, you make all your money on the buy. You realize it on the sale.
Yeah, right.
Now you got to maintain the home over time. So to your first question, what I'm pointing out is if you're buying a home and your first home is not your last home.
Mm.
And I won't ask you how many homes you've bought, Jay, but I personally bought 13.
Okay.
I don't recommend that to anyone out there.
Right.
But just understand it's not a permanent state of affairs.
Right. It's not.
It's a stepping stone to the next home.
Right.
Which is a stepping home to the next home. Right. Right. Homes are always in transition because our lives are always in transition. Right. So let me tell you what the second biggest reason that millennials are not buying.
Okay.
So first was they think things are too expensive.
Right.
Okay. Well, hopefully we demystified that. Second, it is, it's not in the area I want to be in.
Mm.
Hopefully my millennial clients that this applies to are not listening at the moment, but this is a real life example. Millennial client renting in a very high end neighborhood in our area, okay. close to great restaurants, walkability right next to 440, easy to get around, North Hills, renting.
Right.
Renting in North
Hills expensive.
Is very different from trying to buy in North Hills.
Yeah, very different. Yeah.
You can find a cool, nice apartment, two bed, one bed, whatever, for $1,500, $2,500. You're not buying a house for under $500,000 and you're probably playing close to $1 million.
Right.
So my point of bringing this up is if you are a buyer, and this is something that we all did probably, you first identify your absolute needs.
Right.
And then you identify your wants. I want to be in the cool, trendy area.
Right.
Well, as a first-time home buyer or somebody who's not quite all the way there on your income profile, maybe that's not the best filter you should be using for your buy decision. Mm-hmm. So expand your horizons out. So this client did exactly that. And they're up about $80,000 in appreciation on that purchase, 10% down in 24 months.
Which goes back to the first piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's second, if the second reason is I want to be close to conveniences and those type of things, that I'm comfortable in walking distances, that's so forth. But you feel, if you go back to the first one, which says I want to create wealth, you gave them the first reason and at the sacrifice of the second.
No, they got the second too.
Oh, really? Okay.
But it took them to experience it.
Oh.
I know this. I know I walk out my door and I can go to the Italian restaurant.
Right.
I walk out my door and I can go to Lululemon.
Got it.
Like, guys, you can hop on your bike or your car and drive there.
Right.
It's 18 minutes away. It's 8 minutes away. It's six. So what I'm just trying to encourage everyone out there is if you are looking to create wealth in real estate,
right,
and you have capital to deploy, either future earnings, which is what a lender is looking at, or cash, and you're not finding it in what is your immediately targeted area, be a little more adventurous.
Yeah.
And look out and then lean on the professional to give you guidance on whether or not that's got good growth potential.
Yeah.
Because agents are transacting on a daily basis, helping buyers complete their home purchases and sellers. They know what areas are trending. They know what areas are desirable. They also have a good read on if that will be a continuation of effect.
That's beautiful. We've done our 30 minutes.
Well, it's time for me to go, Jay.
Tell people how they can get a hold of you, Tony.
Well, you can always find me at Lindacraft Team Realtors. This is not an ad or promotion. You can always look me up on YouTube, Anthony Fink. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on LinkedIn. And as Jay knows, if you're in need of humor or motivation, look me up on Wednesdays for humor, the Fink Funny, and look me up on Mondays for the Motivational Monday. But Tony at lindacraft.com, you can go on our website. You can find me anywhere.
That's awesome. You know what? Thanks, Tony. You know what, folks? You had a lot of choices. You chose us. We're really grateful that you did. Thank you for watching us on DBTV all over the world. We're really grateful for that, too. And listening to us on podcast, give us a positive review. 5 stars would be awesome. And let us know what you think of the show. As I say to you every week, everywhere, all over the world, ciao, everybody.
Yeah, I want everything. It ain't worth living if you're dreaming small. Living if you're dreaming small.